States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 145 of the USDF's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford and I'm going to be joined this week by Suzanne von Dietz, who will be here to talk about her book Balance in Movement. And then later on we'll hear from the USDF senior judge Marilyn Heath, who will be telling us about her pet peeves from a dressage judge's point of view. We also have several items of news, but before that, I'd like to remind you that the views of guests and the host of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. The United States Dressage Federation would like to congratulate Legolas, the 14-year-old 17-hand Westphalian gelding owned by Aikiko Yamasaki's Four Winds Farm LLC and ridden by Stefan Peters of San Diego, California. They were named the 2016 Adequan USDF Grand Prix Horse of the Year, making him the recipient of the USDF's highest honor for the fifth year in a row, when they achieved a median score of 77.160%, making him the top horse in the United States competing at this level. If you'd like to read more information about the Adequan USDF Horse of the Year Awards or to access a list of the past and current recipients, please visit the website at usdf.org or contact the USDF office at usdressage@usdf.org. On December the 2nd, the United States Equestrian Federation announced that Robert Dover will act as technical advisor in addition to serving as chef d'équipe at agreed-upon U.S. dressage team competitions. He will also continue to play a significant role in fundraising for U.S. dressage programs. Robert Dover assumed the U.S. dressage chef d'équipe and technical advisor role in 2013. Under his leadership, the U.S. dressage team returned to the podium at the 2016 Rio Olympic Games, winning a team bronze medal. A six-time U.S. Olympian and four-time Olympic bronze medalist, Robert Dover has spearheaded the development of an effective pipeline program focused on maintaining U.S. dressage standards of excellence across all levels. USEF President Christine Tauber commented that as an athlete, chef d'équipe, or technical advisor, it's been wonderful to see the amazing impact that he's had on this sport and our athletes. And I know Robert will work hard to build upon this success. Robert will serve as the US Dressage Technical Advisor for the next 2 years. Our first guest this week is Suzanne von Dietz, whose best-selling book, Balance in Movement, is something that you may want to consider as a great Christmas present for the dressage rider in your life. Suzanne trained and worked as a Bereiter in Germany for both dressage and show jumping, whilst simultaneously working as a physiotherapist in a private clinic. Her focus was back pain and spinal injury, and that combination of interests and abilities eventually led to her unique perspective and ways of teaching riding to everyone, from children up through Grand Prix dressage riders. Suzanne joins me now to explain the philosophy behind the book and why she thinks it can help you improve your riding. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Welcome, Chris.
Well, very nice of you to join us, and we want to talk about your book, Balance in Movement, The Seat of the Rider, which has been in publication now for a number of years in English as well as in German. When did that all start for you? How did the actual concept of the book take place? I mean, what was your philosophy behind it to put it in print?
That's a question with that actually needs a little bit of a longer answer. If you understand my background, it's pretty logic, because I grew up in Germany in a very horsey environment. My father was a former cavalry officer, and he got injured in Stalingrad, spent a couple of years in a wheelchair, and through getting back on a horse, recovered his leg and went back walking. My mother was a physiotherapist, teacher for sport and gymnastic, and together my parents started the whole concept of therapeutic riding in Germany. So in that sense, I grew up with Horses all my life. Had my riding instructor license very early, my judging license as one of the youngest in Germany. And parallel, I learned and studied physiotherapy. My friends say that already during my physiotherapy study, I was telling them that I'm going to write a book about that. I don't really remember that, but I do remember that I kept understanding things about the rider and his seat in much deeper way when I studied physiotherapy, and my own riding improved a lot, even though I did not have that many instructing time there. And when I passed my riding instructor in Warendorf, in Germany, with the Trainer A license, I could pass with a very high mark by seeing on the rider all the mistakes and listing them, saying everything he does wrong, but not how he solves it. And of course, the physiotherapy eye, if I see a nodding head, I see that something may be blocked in the hip or in the spine. I see that feet turned out have their cause in the pelvis. So I have a different eye and a different way of correcting it. And I felt the need of writing all that down. So when I proposed my ideas of how this should be looked at to some people in the German Federation, the German Federation actually asked me to write the book. So it was not just only my idea, I was asked to write it. At that time, I was 25 years old. I had just finished my exams, and I was in that lucky time where you think you know it all. I think a year later, I would not have dared to write the book anymore because I just realized what I started learning.
The learning obviously was all part of your studying that complex physical relationship between a horse and rider, as you say, and you viewed it in a different way. What were the fundamental points that you were trying to convey in the book in general, Suzanne?
Well, mostly when you go to a riding lesson, you get told how to improve your horse. And I just started it from a different way. Instead of working on the horse until the rider can sit, I was working on the rider until the horse could move. Because I understand the concept of riding as a common balance between horse and rider. And every mistake I see has a relationship to something getting out of balance. So a rider who sits in good balance can always help the horse. Once I'm out of balance, in order not to fall off, I need more strength. And that disturbs the whole circle of harmony and the lightness of the aids.
So it's important then for riders basically to understand the anatomical requirements for trying to achieve that perfect seat. You know, what it's going to take a rider to be better in touch, in tune with their own body.
Yes, a good body awareness is what the rider needs. We don't need the perfect body for riding. If you look internationally, you will find in all disciplines in riding very different types of people. Long, short, longer legs, shorter legs, wider upper body, shorter upper body, you know. They all ride really, really well because they are in harmony with their own body. And they use their own body so that the horse can read it.
And of
So it's
course,
really understanding yourself and being in balance with yourself.
yes, and very important, of course, you know, if you watch very, very good riders, how minimal the movement is, the understanding of their own body and how minimum the movement is to affect anything on the horse through their aid. So talk about the chapter titles, Suzanne, if you would, and the key points in those chapter titles.
Well, I started explaining a little bit in the book about the physiology of movement. Then I went on into the describing the different parts of the body, like the movement center of our pelvis. And I started with the pelvis because that's our connection part with the horse. That's where we make contact with the horse, where we're sitting on. And I described then in the pelvis the basic anatomy, how different it is, what are the parts, how can you touch, how can you move it in a functional anatomy sense. And then I put it like, how is the perfect position on the horse in dressage and jumping? How should it move with the horse? I explain what happens, what are the problems if it's out of balance, what does it cause for difficulties, and then I have a part of exercises, what can you do to improve it. And in the same concept, I go through all the different body parts. Starting from the pelvis, I go to the upper body and head position, to the shoulders and arms and hands, to the legs. And after I've gone through the whole body, I'm putting it together as a coordination thing into the aids. How to coordinate this circle of aids all together. And I'm introducing a little bit of a different system. Instead of speaking as usually taught of the weight aids, the leg aids, and the rein aids, I'm trying to show the concept of the interplay of forward driving and collecting aids, inside and outside aids, that we're surrounding the horse from all sides. And then there's a chapter about typical problems, what could be the cause, how can you address a correction, what can you do to solve it. And the last chapter is a little bit of a comparison of what happens inside the body of the rider and how does that immediately influence the body of the horse. A lot of osteopaths for horses that I know keep complaining that they find the same problem they see in the horse in the main trainer of that horse, main rider. And they will only come for a second or third visit for the same problem if the main rider will take a therapy session with them too. So there's a lot of things parallel. So that's the idea of the book, was really to give an understanding of how the body functions and how ideal our own anatomy is actually cut to ride well. It's actually a very natural movement for us and not something we have to be super strong or super mobile or have this or have that. We can ride with our body as it is if we use it correctly.
Well, clearly this has been a best-selling publication now for a long time. Since 1999 it was first published in English. What do you think the readers have, I'm curious as to what the feedback has been from the readers and what they've taken away from this. There've been their sort of what we call light bulb moments. They've read that and suddenly the pieces have been put together for their own riding.
I mean, what I've often got told is that the book makes perfect sense. And that, why didn't I think of that before? And that understanding that the same principles of movement are valid still when I'm riding was like, it just was the same thing. So if I have to ride a turn where I have to complicate it, put my inside hip forward and the outside shoulder with it and this funny twist in the seat to really follow with my shoulders, the horse's shoulders, and with my hips, the horse's hips, if I walk around a corner, it all happens naturally. It's all there. So that we have a combination or between the walking pattern and the riding, that we can take our experience from some movement that we have naturally onto the horse. So I made it for a lot of people easier to understand what all these complicated descriptions of the aids are filled with.
Well, finally, then, let's hear your elevator speech then, Suzanne. If you wanted to sell this book in, you know, two sentences, why people should buy Balance in Movement, The Seat of the Rider, how would you summarize that?
Well, for me, being in balance means that that you're moving, and life is movement. So refining your balance means you refine your movement together with a horse. And if you want to dance with a horse and be in harmony, you need to understand your own body and its balance and how it functions. And then you can expand that to the horse. So this would be for me the main key that I'm trying to explain to people.
All right, that is Balance in Movement by Suzanne von Dientz. Suzanne, thank you so much for coming on the program and explaining that. And that book, of course, is available through the USDF bookstore. Suzanne, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
And as we come to the end of the year, a reminder that USDF members get an added 25% discount on this book and other items that they purchase in the USDF online store before the end of the year. And whilst you're on the website, you'll find actually a sample chapter of this book on the eTrack section of the website. USEF Senior Dressage Judge and L Faculty Member Marilyn Heath is here now to tell us what really bothers her as a dressage judge as she shares with us her pet peeves. Hi Marilyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
Good to have you back again. Where would you like to start?
Probably what bothers me the most is riders who seemingly ignore the purpose of the level they're riding. You know, the purpose of each level is stated of each dressage test and also in the USEF rulebook. It's important to fulfill the purpose of each level before moving to the next level. For instance, a horse that at training level is required to move freely forward with a clear rhythm and a steady tempo, accepting contact with the bit. And so it's disconcerting to have a rider come in at first or second level when they haven't truly fulfilled those requirements of training level of having the horse moving freely forward, clear rhythm, steady tempo, and accepting contact. And as one moves up the levels, the requirements get a little more demanding. For instance, at first level, there should be an increased amount of slightly better balance and an increased amount of engagement and suppleness and throughness and a more consistent consistency of the contact. And then at second level, that's the beginning of collection and it's a more uphill, it's the beginning of an uphill balance and it requires the horse to be not just accepting the bit but reliably on the bit. So to have a horse come in and try to do the movements of second level without having the basic requirements of the level having been met, it's very difficult. We judges like to give as high a score as we can. My philosophy is to give a score that is the best I can. But judges cannot reward poor training or poor basics. And so it comes across sometimes like the judges are being mean, and we're not being mean, we're just being realistic. So that's important. And then also, at third level, let's take it up one more notch. Some people ride third level because they can't ride their horses in a snaffle. And some ride third level because the horse can do flying changes. And they may or may not have the correct basics. So it's important for riders to fulfill the purpose of each level as they move up the ladder. A lack of harmony is a little troublesome. It should look like when I'm judging a horse that I would love to go out and ride that horse. It should look like the horse is happy and the rider is happy and that they're both having fun. So that's another goal to attain. And then when a horse is lacking harmony, sometimes it's because, or the pair is lacking harmony, sometimes it's because the riders are riding from front to back instead of from back to front. The rider should create the forward energy and receive that in the hand rather than saying, well, it's my responsibility to put the horse on the bit. It's not. It's the horse's responsibility to accept the contact. The rider's responsibility to receive the contact that the horse is offering. And the way to offer it is to ride the horse from back to front, not from front to back. Very often it looks like the rider is using their hands in such a way that it makes the horse's head wag. If the rider's using their hands left, right, left, right, left, right, then the horse's nose is wagging left, right, left, right, left, right. You can tell just by what the horse is doing what the rider's doing. And in the canter, the head goes around in a little, the nose goes around in a little circle in response to the rider's hands sometimes. And that's one of the components under the rider score, is the rider following the biomechanics of the gait. And that's a first in this current test cycle that that's been included. So it's very important that the rider follow the movement of the horse's head and neck at the walk and at the canter, and hold it still at the trot where the horse's head is more still. At the same time, it's not all on the rider. It's important for judges to form their comments in such a way that they have the most helpful effect on the performance of the horse. We don't want to say, for instance, if the judge says, needs bend, what's the rider going to do? They're going to pull with the inside rein. Instead, if one phrases the comment that the horse needs to stretch to the outer rein, it's more helpful. I hope it's more helpful to the rider. Also, that the horse needs to rotate his rib cage, which is a little complicated to put on a test sheet, but the horse needs to contract the muscles of the inside, which then stretches the muscles of the outside, and that's why it's the inside leg that does the bending, because the inside leg creates the contraction of the muscles in the rib cage on the inside, allowing the stretch on the outside. And the hand, the outside hand, you want the horse to stretch into the outside hand, but you mustn't be so a rider must not be so restrictive with the outside rein as to prevent the horse from stretching to it. Then when we get down the list a little bit, and it becomes more really peeves rather than the importance of the basics, inaccuracies. We say that inaccuracy is a modifier. But when the inaccuracy avoids the difficulty of the movement, it becomes more than a modifier. And it's so unnecessary to lose valuable points because of inaccuracies, such as a circle at B or E is usually ridden as a 24 by 20 meter oval, not a true circle. And an understanding of the geometry of the arena and where the letters are placed makes it easy to ride a 20-meter circle. But part of the problem is that most of the time we only have a judge at sea, and the judge at sea doesn't see very clearly that it's an inaccurate circle or incorrect circle. And the thing is, it's important to ride an accurate circle because it affects the training of the horse. A circle is round throughout. An oval has two flat spots. And so you're bending and straightening and bending and straightening. And you're the rider is sacrificing the correct training by doing that. And then another thing that comes to mind is, how does one salute? According to the rule book, the rider drops one hand and nods the head, male or female. These flamboyant salutes are unnecessary and distracting. Some riders take their hand off the reins and put their hand a foot and a half or so out to the side. I understand that because some judges, it's hard to see whether the rider has actually taken the reins in one hand and the rider is making sure that the judge sees the salute. I understand that completely. But in addition to the flamboyant salute, saluting the side judge when there is one is uncalled for and really not necessary. I know it's a show of respect to the side judge, but it's really not correct. So that in a nutshell is all I could think of that bothers me. I love to give high scores. And when I don't give high scores, I try, and we teach people to try to explain why they have removed whatever percentage of the score they have. You know, people think a 7 is a good score. Well, it is a fairly good score, but there is a reason why one has removed a certain amount from the score, and it's helpful to the rider if one can explain why that is so. So it's a two-way street. I'm sure that if you asked a rider, what are your pet peeves about a judge? That would be an interesting sequel to this podcast.
Very good, Marilyn. Well, thank you very much indeed for sharing yours, and we appreciate you taking the time to come on the program. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And finally, as we come to the end of the year, we want to remind you to ensure that your membership is renewed. The 2017 USDF membership year began on December the 1st. Members who renew early will enjoy an increased member discount of 25% in the USDF store, valid through December 31st, 2016. And only members as of December 31st will receive the 2016 yearbook issue of the USDF Connection magazine. And a note for FEI riders and competition organisers. The FEI has made changes to several of the FEI tests, and you can find more information about those current versions of these tests at the FEI website. The new FEI tests will take effect from the 1st of January 2017. And these changes have already been made to the digital version of the USDF member guide, which is available online and on the USDF's app at USDF, your dressage connection. And as winter sets in and the cold weather may keep you from your riding, you can meanwhile take advantage of eTrack. Whether you prefer the short topic or a specific video, audio downloads or longer videos of select USDF events, you'll find them all on eTrack at usdf.org. Remember to log in with your USDF login password and enjoy hours of dressage-specific education. And a final note that the USDF office will be closed for the holiday season from December the 23rd through January the 2nd. And our first podcast of 2017 will be brought to you on January the 4th. In the meanwhile, we'd like to wish you all a very happy holiday season and remind you that you can download this podcast from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. We'll be back in the new year. Until then, thank you all for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.